Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 262, and really grateful, really thankful, really appreciative of Adam Hepker, the men's basketball coach at Mid-American Nazarene University, to accommodate my schedule this evening. I wanted to go up and watch some of our students play in our unified basketball game tonight, and coach was accommodating with his time to allow me to do that. So definitely want to thank him publicly for that. And high school coaches, if you get a chance, if you have a unified program at your school in any sort of sport, I greatly encourage you to support it. Get your players involved. It is a great thing. So, but yes, very pleased to have Adam Hepker, head boy or men's basketball coach, Mid-American Nazarene, as I said here. Before we get to Coach Hepker, we want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see COSAC Chiropractic. Check out their practice at COSACHIRO.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on their Twitter handle. Be sure to, if you're listening to this, download, rate, review, give us 5 stars. Subscribe would be great. Do all that stuff so that we can move up in the rankings when folks look up coaching basketball podcasts on iTunes or Spotify. A Pen and a Napkin pops up there. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. So greatly appreciative here. Coach, it is a Tuesday night. It is the middle of the season. It is the meat of the season. You could be doing so many things other than talking to this Yahoo, and yet you have decided to do that. So, Adam Hepker, I really, really appreciate it, my man.
Absolutely, Marty. I'm fired up to be on. I always enjoy doing things like this, and I mean, I'm a junkie like you are. So anytime I get the chance to talk hoops and maybe learn a bit, a bit more about it from somebody else, I'm always on board to do that.
Well, let's dive into it here, Coach. Let's just kind of start this the way that we normally start here. Tell us about your basketball journey and yeah. How you ended up being the head men's basketball coach at Mid-American Nazarene.
Yeah, I'm an Iowa guy, born and raised in a small town in eastern Iowa where, high school athletics and school pride is a big deal. And I was a manager for a Hall of Fame high school basketball coach in Iowa named Bill Fleming. And since about the fifth or sixth grade, and so grew up watching filming practices and games and sweeping the floor, and was just immersed in basketball. And my parents were gracious enough to allow me to do that. Maybe, get home late at night, even though I was just a young kid, and spending a lot of time around coach. And I went on to, after playing high school basketball there in Metoka, Iowa, to play for a guy that he coached, that Coach Fleming also coached. His first Golf State point guard named Rocky Lamar down here at Mid-American Nazarene, where I am now. And so both Coach Lamar and I are from the same hometown in eastern Iowa, and was fortunate to have, a decent high school career and have some NAIs and Division IIs recruit me and still in love with Olathe, Kansas and the people here at Mid-America. And obviously played here for 4 years. And then my coaching journey is taking me all over the country, but here I am already with my dream job, the head coach at my alma mater, where I bleed red, white, and blue. So this is year three for me. Took over for Coach Lamar when he retired. He coached 36 years here and won over 800 games. And I'm reminded that I haven't done anything every day when I see his name on the court. So that'll keep me up at night and preparing. And, we're trying to be really, really good stewards of a top-tier NAI program that we get to take care of every day. And so far, so good.
Yeah, one of our newest questions on the program here, the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment, and you talked a little bit about it, Adam, but when do you remember the first time taking pen to paper or pen to napkin and starting to scribble out those X's and O's and thinking about diving in real hard and being a basketball coach someday?
I love that question, Marty. It's a phenomenal question. Because I'm not sure, especially young coaches these days, I'm not sure they do that enough, where whether it's on their laptop or in a notebook, where they're, whatever they're learning, they're putting pen to paper. For me, it was watching Coach Fleming watch film when I was a manager for his high school teams. You know, we'd go all in and go in the locker room and break down the film. And that's how I really learned to study the game. And he always had he had one of those, Marty, those NBA looking notebooks that the cover is the basketball material.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
One of the quality notebooks. And I always thought that was the coolest thing. And he had the neatest handwriting. And anytime he had, you know, it didn't matter if it was Duke, North Carolina, Coach Fleming had his notebook out and was always taking notes and then was really good at boiling it all down before he presented that information to his team. But that's when I learned, I think, how to be a student of the game and, you know, what he saw to watching a game tape versus what the rest of us saw was just mind-boggling. And he was fortunate enough to teach him those ways. And I think that's a strength of mine because it started so many years ago as a young kid. When you watch it on film, you see it a different way and you get to replay it and watch it over and over again. But that's the first time, Coach, I remember taking a bunch of notes about the game. And he also taught me, you know, you can't just watch yourself. You can't just watch the ball. You got to see nine other guys out there and just kind of, you know, opening that view when you are watching it. And literally, I have a Word document going every year to this day that I mean, this year it's called 24, 25 Notes. And it's just an ongoing document that I leave open. And whether it's an action or a quote that a coach said or a drill, or I put it on there. And, you know, every couple of days I go back and look at it and pull some of those ideas off. So I'm a huge student of the game. I think that's the beauty of our game, Marty, is that there's so much to learn.
Absolutely.
And there's so many different ways to win, is what makes our game so special. You can play fast, you can play slow, you can play man, you can play zone, you can shoot threes, you can go in the post. And so I love learning about the game and it's, you know, information about basketball is more accessible than it's ever been if coaches are willing to use it the right way. You know, sometimes social media gets a bad rap, but I happen to think there's a ton of information out there if you follow the right people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I could think of one place people can follow where they can get good basketball information. Shameless plug for at a pen and a napkin. But no, there is, you're right. I mean, there's so many different things that you could connect with and people that you could talk to and you know this just as well as I do, Adam, if you see something that you like from somebody else, And you want to delve in further, 98.3 out of 100 coaches will say, you know, if you reach out and said, hey, coach, could we talk to more about X, Y, and Z? They're going to say, absolutely. Hey, let's chat, you know, and that's another beautiful thing about our profession.
I agree with you. And I think that changed a little bit, Marty. You know, I think the old school way is cards close to your vest and this is my way and I'm not sharing a thing. And I think in today's day and age of information sharing, maybe it's how we grew up, but like, that's just what you do is you share the game, you grow the game. Basically behind the scenes, what do you want to know? We have high school practices and junior college, coaches and high school coaches come into our practices and mm-hmm. It's like, here's our practice film. Do you want clips? What do you need? You know what I mean? It's just, I think it's the right thing to do. And I think coaches are more willing than they ever have to help to share and grow the game like you do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Coach Lamar here, which is crazy as I was researching. Both of you guys are from Maquoketa, just a small town. Is Maquoketa 2A?
It's 3A, only about 7,500 people.
Okay.
About 30 minutes from the Mississippi River. It sits right in between Dubuque and Davenport, the Quad Cities, two bigger cities there and then in eastern Iowa. But it's 3A high school. Used to be the WOMAC conference. I don't know what it is these days, but really, really high level basketball in Eastern Iowa and lots of really good coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's crazy that you and Coach Lamar are both from Maquoketa, both end up at Mid-American Nazarene. You know, is it, yeah. I mean, you know, you could draw that story up a million different times and it, And it doesn't end up like that, but that's the way it ended up here. You know, so you played for Coach Lamar, you worked for Coach Lamar. Now you've kind of you're stepping into his position. What are some of the things that you have taken from him?
Yeah, great question, Marty. You know, Coach Lamar, what he did so well that I think a lot of coaches get backwards these days is he understood, Marty, that you coach people first. They are people before they're athletes, before they're players. And he was so relationally driven. He wanted to know you and develop trust in you. And he was a borderline father figure for me. That's how strong our relationship was. And because of that, and so many of his former players would say the same thing I'm saying, we would do whatever he asked of us and never ask why. You know what I mean? We would play incredibly hard for him, and it's because of the relationships. He knew that that's where it started. And you know, players these days, you know, do they need a why? Yeah. Do they need this and that? Yeah. But the bottom line is they're not going to do anything until they trust you. And that's where it started for Coach Lamar. So he got the relationship piece correct. And then I think the other thing, Marty, is he created unbelievable belief in teams. You know, we could lose 2 or 3 in a row, and he was the eternal optimist. He would show up to practice the next day. You know, maybe not with the schematic change. Sometimes it would be that, but just, changing our perspective a little bit to like, hey, guys, we're going to figure this out. And how he articulated it was always very powerful. And obviously it worked, and we believed him. And before you know it, all of a sudden we won 6 or 7 in a row, and it's because of the belief he created. He was so good at that. X's and O's and things like that. Was he good at it? Yes. But you know, it's the stuff I just mentioned that he crushed, and none of that stuff works unless your players believe in you and love you and trust you. And that's what Lamar did so well.
Mm-hmm. I hope this made sense when I sent it to you, Adam. I'm a history nerd. And you're a history, your degree is in history and government and the study of that. And I know that there's certain things that I've looked at in, especially like history and kind of the way the brain works a little bit. You know, how do you think, you know, and I don't know if this even makes any sense, but, you know, how do you think the study of history and just having that, and there's great coaches out there that are math teachers, there's great coaches out there that are business teachers, you know, all the way around the line, but I've always thought that, you know, there's, you know, the study of history, analyzing things, managing people, doing things like that. I think it just serves that role of being a coach in a very good way. It's a good fit, so to speak. And maybe I'm just talking out of my keister. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, Coach. I think there's some correlation. Certainly, you know, the art of war, the, you know, preparation for things like that in history, wars and battles and you know, how we prepare for the competition that is set before us. I think about learning from history as we do as a country and as a world, but also as a coach, like, you know, those losses, Marty, I'm sure you can agree, like, those are the ones you remember, you know, and oftentimes there is something specific. And I look back that I would have 100% had done it differently. And you know, we're in the thick of league play here. So we play double round robin. We play everybody twice. And one thing I always do without fail is I go back and watch, you know, we do a recap of every game, 20 to 25 clips that we show our guys. I go watch the recap, but I rewatch the whole first game, you know, the whole first time we played that opponent, because I just, you know, obviously, we're going to watch their most recent 2 or 3 games, but I think you learn the most from when your team is playing them. So, you know, that's history. That's studying what you did well. And, you know, can we do that again? Or do we need to make adjustments? Okay, we did that poorly. And you know, I think there's a lot of correlation there. And then obviously just, you know, as you mentioned, the different subjects, just coaching and teaching. That's what it is. It's we are teachers, you know, at the college level. Obviously, we're not teaching classes, but from 3 to 5, that's what I get to do, is I get to teach my guys. And, you know, all this information we reference that's available to us, Can we boil it down and make it concise enough that my 18, 23-year-old can understand it and not just understand it, but believe in it and mm-hmm. do it? Yeah. I think that's teaching. I think that's what we do. And I think that's what the great coaches do. And all this available to us, does it fit my team? Does it fit my guys? Does it make sense today? And they're able to articulate to that guy through a variety of platforms, through film and having them take notes and walking through it and then doing it at full speed and then we got to that. So, you know, the bottom line is we are teachers as coaches and you high school guys, you could do both. And we college guys, we teach from 3 to 5 every day.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, right? T-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. One of the things I really liked about your Twitter feed, Coach, is you are really, really supportive of the other programs in your community, on your campus. Maybe it sounds bad, but it's also the truth. You know, football, men's and women's basketball, you know, women's volleyball, those are kind of the big four on most campuses. Those are kind of your revenue drivers. But you're out there supporting soccer, baseball, all these different things here. You know, as a leader in the community, you know, how important is it to be a presence, to be a supportive spirit of the other programs, the other coaches of those programs, those players? I'm sure, you know, a small college like Mid-American Nazarene, you know a lot of the kids and the other activities, the other sports as well. You know how important is that to bring everybody together in that way?
Yeah, it's huge, Marty. The quote that comes to mind is nobody is being over-encouraged. Like, nobody has too much encouragement, right? Like, we're all just dying for encouragement, and most of us, if we're being honest, we don't get enough of it. I know that's true for my players all the other college athletes on our campus at Mid-American Nazarene. I think now, you referenced it, small college athletics, I think we're about 60% athletes, you know, at Mid-American, so... Yeah. We're all a little bit like-minded, and in my mind, we need to all support each other. We might be there for different sports, but we all have that competition background, you know, kind of uniting us. So I think I've got to take the lead on that and show that it's important to my players. And my guys are really good about, you know, being in the student section for the volleyball games and then going to the football game. And that's a priority for our program. You know, obviously, selfishly, Marty, that attracts them to our game. But secondly, it's the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. And so I want to promote everybody in America. I want to promote our institution. Obviously, it's my alma mater.
Yeah.
But I just think that encouragement goes so far for those athletes, whoever it is. You know, I referenced on Twitter, on X the other day, on women's team, it was undefeated in league play.
They must be really good.
They're really, really good, and they're fun to watch. And so it's authentic. You know, I'm not inventing cleats. It's what I see. It's what I feel when I watch them play. And when you see that stuff, I think you got to give people credit for it. You know, I'm an old school guy. I still write notes and thank yous. I can write and mail them to people. And if a high school coach at the town lets us use him to practice, he's going to get a note. I think people need more encouragement and compliments in a world where people are desperate for that stuff. And I'm happy to give it.
Mm-hmm. You got a chance after your playing career, and for folks that don't know, Coach is pretty modest. You know, 2 or 3 time All-American, won a national championship his senior year. So don't let him fool you here. He had a little bit of a game. I'm a Northwest Iowa guy by nature. That's where I grew up. So it's hard for me to admit that somebody from Eastern Iowa might not have it, but Coach was a really good player, and you got a chance to play overseas for a year in Germany. What was that experience like, and especially from like a basketball point of view, and how did that experience affect you as a coach? And when you came back to the States and you decided you wanted to get into this lifestyle?
Yeah, great question, Marty. Yeah, the thing that stuck out to me being a point guard was the pay of the game being played over there, partially because of the 24-second shot clock, right? And so, you know, make or miss, we're getting that ball out. And you know, some teams do this with the drag ball screen here in the States, although, you know, it may be a little less prevalent at the college and high school level compared to the NBA. But, you know, 4 seconds in the shot clock here, and here comes my big, get ready to set me the first kick and roll of what might be 3 in the next 12 seconds. You know what I mean? And look how quickly those guys in Europe get into their first action and then get to 2 or 3 sides of the floor or 2 or 3 other triggers or actions, whatever you want to call them, before the end of the shot clock. It was a huge adjustment for me, Marty, when I first got over there. Just the extra 6 seconds that, you know, we were used to playing with here with a 30-second shot clock. The pace was eye-opening for me, and my conditioning had to be better. And there was so much. Not that I didn't have, as a point guard here in college, decision-making and responsibilities in that way, but it was even, you know, it was tenfold over there because of all the extra possessions. And so it's a very simple game over there, but played with incredible pace. And you know, those coaches can move the pieces a whole heck of a lot of times in a short shot clock here and generate some really, really great shots. And then I think the other thing I learned and try to communicate this to my guys here is just no panic late in the shot clock either. Like fellas, 8 seconds is a long time.
Yeah.
We just don't need to shoot the ball yet. We've got time to go one more side and turn down a good one to get a great one. So, you know, that instantly when I saw that question and you asked it, that came to mind was just how efficient they are with those 24 seconds. And you know, it's also a good reminder of if you've got really good point guard play, you know this, you know, just how simple the game gets, because you don't have to get real fancy. You know, you can just bring a second guy to the ball and make the defense wrong with a pick and roll. So it was very pick and roll heavy. I like that. I like having the ball in my hands a lot. Not that we ask our RPG to do that all the time, but it was a phenomenal learning experience, you know, just for the year I was over there, because it's a little bit different game. And then all of a sudden, you know, some of us American coaches are starting to study the European game like that. After being over there, you know, you hear about Nate Oates and some of these guys, and Dan Hurley, you kind of, it makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of brilliant coaches over there.
Well, they've only been around for, you know, 4 or 5,000 years or so at a highly developed level, you know, so, yeah, they've done some things right, you know, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I always kind of wondered when they would say, you know, European guys are soft. And I would sit there and go, do you know, again, going down the history nerd side of things, do you know how many brutal wars have been fought in Europe over the thousands of years? There's no way those guys are soft or not tough or anything like that. What was the game? Just out of curiosity here, was it more physical over there, less physical? You know,
that more physical. Yeah, absolutely more physical. Yeah. It was war is not the right term, but it was incredibly physical. You could grab, you could hold. They're going to put their shooters over there. Like, I think they do a really good job in NBA here. Maybe not so much at the high school and college level, but man, arm bars on your drives and foul with your chest. And of course, I thought, Marty, I was getting picked on because I was one of two Americans playing and had a little victim mindset there. But yeah, it much, much more physical. In fact, so, you know, we've got two kids from one from Spain who starts at the four for me, who's our best rebounder, one of the best rebounders in our conference, Gerard Bosch, at 6'6", who will just throw you out of the way or put you in a smile and let the ball go over your head while he rebounds it. We have a stud threat from Joby Cannon from the UK, from Manchester. And honestly, Marty, I say this truthfully, it was an adjustment for these guys, some of the whistles that were being called. Gerard's a sophomore for us, Joe's a freshman. You know, they were baffled by some of the whistles in our early fall games because they're just used to killing each other over there. And so, you know, we've had to teach them and coach them on that. But of course, you know, they're probably the ones calling us soft over here.
Oh yeah. What have you learned about recruiting? You know, as we say on a pen and a napkin here, Adam, as you've become more seasoned and experienced, how have you developed as a recruiter? What do you feel like you've gotten better at? And what did you have to learn about recruiting?
Yeah, wow. Phenomenal question. You know, it continues to change, Marty. It changes every year. I'll come back to what hasn't changed, but with NIL, with transfer portal, you know, we don't mess with NIL stuff yet at our level, to my knowledge, but with less transfer penalty for multiple transfers and just the Division I or bust mindset around our game, that's really hard as the small college guys, because unless you're at the Division I level, you know, D2 on now, everything is, not everything, but a lot of it is partial scholarships. You know, this is package deals, you know, some academic money, some athletic, and then maybe a couple of guys on full ride scholarship, where at the Division I level, there's 13 guys not playing and two walk-ons. You know,
yep.
There's a real lack of education about other levels outside of D1. And unfortunately, every kid you recruit, he's in Division I, man. He doesn't know other levels. And so, yep. You know, we play open duty all summer long from 8 to 10, you know, on the weeknights, June and July. And kids interested in our program, one of the first things I tell them, Marty, is we'll watch you come up and play with us for 2 hours and see how you impact the game on both ends. And I think that's very eye-opening for most high school kids or even, you know, even junior college kids.
Yeah.
So it continues to change. And I think us coaches have to evolve and we can spend time pouting and complaining about the current recruiting landscape at our level, or we can adjust and try to be ahead of it. And that's my goal. And so to bring this back to what hasn't changed is it's still about relationships. For me, I'm going to recruit you harder than any other coach that's recruiting. You're going to hear from me on the phone, that graphics, a DM on X, clips of your game, clips of our game, highlight reels. You're going to hear from us more than you're going to hear from any other program. And I'm going to develop a better relationship with you than those other coaches. And through being authentic, nothing fake. And I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm going to be a truth teller. You know, I tell our guys all the time in film sessions, we're going to tell you the truth and we're going to love you like heck afterwards. But for me, that's watching the recruiting process. And does that run some guys off? Like, you know, Marty, today I had one of our junior college bigs that we're recruiting said, Coach, do you see me as a back-to-the-basket big only? You know, and I knew exactly where he was going with the question is,
yep.
Am I going to let him be a jump shooter for us? And so to me, I'm like, no, you're going to be a rim-running, triggering action, screening and rolling bait for us. And you're going to go get on boards. And we'll let you toss it from the elbow and some of our Princeton stuff. But if we mislead them in the recruiting process, when they get on our campus, Marty, they're going to be miserable. You know what I mean? If we're completely honest with them in the recruiting process, I might lose a couple of guys, but the guys I get, for the most part, it's not an exact science, and you're never going to bat a thousand, but you're going to have guys that knew what to expect, and because of that are less frustrated, because the gap between expectation and reality in that gray area, that's frustration. And so trying to be perfectly clear about what it's going to look like, what it's going to feel like, okay, you're a high school kid, it's going to be really hard to play, I don't care what level it is, you know, and so it will always be about relationships, it will always be about being authentic and being a truth teller, and then I think just trying to stay as best as we can ahead of the times of as difficult as that is, as it continues to shift each year.
Do you think kids are more open or less open to the truth today than they were 10 years ago?
Oh, man, Marty.
This is why they pay me the big bucks.
That's a great question.
I'm still looking for the big bucks, by the way. So
yeah. No, same here. I don't know, Marty. I'll tell you this. You know, and his kids, to a large degree, have not changed at all. What's changed is our expectation of them. Parenting has changed. Coaching has changed. Administration has changed to where we coaches can't be as much of truth tellers as we would like to be. Kids, by and large, the night thing.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head in a lot of ways there. You are, as a coach, are not allowed to be the truth teller that you would like to be at times.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And we maybe have to do it more, you know, we don't cuss kids out. It just doesn't happen in our practice. You can teach and coach without using those words and without taking shots at a kid's character. But what we are going to do is, I'm going to show you your stats. I'm going to show you our stats as a team, our KPIs, and I'm going to show you a film. And I'm going to praise you like crazy, you know, when you do it well. Nobody gets more excited for me. But at the same time, if you're not doing it all the way, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
Because the standard is the standard. And if you can get a room full of kids, or mostly room full of kids that can buy into that, I think you've got something good going. And then I think eventually they will influence the guys that they'll squeeze them, you know, that you're worried about. You know, I don't know if you'll ever have a roster full of kids that we call them OKGs, our kind of guys that mm-hmm. yes sir, no sir. But if you have enough of them, Marty, I think you can, first of all, you can have a lot of fun. I think the practices are going to be awesome, and I think you can win a lot of games too.
Well, I think it was Dick Bennett. Maybe it wasn't, but I'm going to give credit to Dick Bennett. Can we lose with this guy? I think is the when you're really looking at a player, and as high school coaches, obviously we don't have nearly the options that you have at the collegiate level. But you guys at the collegiate level don't have as many options as what people on the outside looking in understand as well. They just think, well, I'll just go get this guy, this guy, this guy, and hey, we're great. You know, it's not that easy. You know, but I think a big part of that is, you know, I know I can win with that person, but can I lose with that person? And can you tell the truth to that person to get them to be, if they're not ready to be the type of person that you can lose with, but you feel like you can get there, but if you're not allowed to talk to them and address them and communicate with them and tell them the truth the way you need to tell them the truth, then you have no chance of getting them to that point. And I think that might be the dividing point there, the pivot point that we've ran into in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part about recruiting in my 15 years now doing this is what is the kid like in the face of adversity? You know, we had practice, I think 78 or 79 today. That's not counting our shoot arounds or our walkthroughs or our film sessions. And, you know, the college season is long. The recruiting process is fun and easygoing, and for the most part. And, you know, there's very little adversity, obviously, to it. But when I ask coaches, be it a high school coach or a junior college coach or, you know, even higher levels with a kid that's transferring, what I want is the truth, Marty, from that coach on that kid's resiliency, right? Because he has some substance to him. Because at some point, 4 days into practice where the honeymoon phase is over, that kid's going to get called out or his team's going to lose a drill. And I'm going to know a lot about that kid that I wish I knew in May when I signed him. You know what I mean? And I just, we can't fly out like Calipari can and spend time with him and his family and see a bunch of high school practice. We can do that as much as we can, but what's so hard to figure out, Artie, does the kid have some use to him, some adversity response? It's our definition of toughness. Like, can he respond and go next play? That's what makes it an inexact science, because they, high school coaches, whoever, they'll tell you for the most part what you want to hear about the kid. What we need is coaches to be honest with us and you coaches to be honest with us so that we know exactly what we're getting from the kid. Does that make sense?
No, it makes 1,000% sense, I was, as Forrest Gump would say, a long time ago, I was a assistant coach at an NAIA school, Briarcliff, you think a kid, you get him on campus, and granted, at that time we were really, really, really good. I mean, we were top five in the country for five straight years. We were loaded, and we would have all staters that couldn't make it just because of the intensity level, what we demanded of the players, the standard that we had, all of that stuff. And you could take a look at their GPA. You could talk to the high school counselor. You could do this, you could do that. But the one thing you can't do is you can't open up that kid's chest and just take a look at their heart and just say, how bad do you want this? And how, we're not talking about when we say sacrifice, we're not talking life or death or anything like that, but just, the character inside that person. Are you okay with only taking 4 shots a game, playing 15 minutes a game, but Mid-American Nazarene wins a national championship? Or would you rather go to school X, who is going to win 20 games, but you're going to play 30 minutes a game, you're going to get 15 shots a game? Where is that at? And that's hard to gauge. That's the difference between good teams and great teams. And a lot of times, even the coaches don't have a great idea of what that's going to be like once you get that whole mix together.
No, that's exactly right. And I think about, the Division I teams who are recruiting through the portal. You can't just assemble talent. It has to be more than that. We're not just assembling the most talent we can get. That talent has to fit, and they have to complement each other, because we're only going to have one leading scorer, one guy that plays 30. You know what I mean? And so it is absolutely an art form. And when you see a kid, you're at a high school game or a practice or a junior college game, and you see a kid with it. The it that you're describing and I'm describing, like, that's the kid you got to have. And then the hard part is you don't see that very often. You know what I mean? But those are the kids we're after. And sometimes you got to rely on your culture and your program to help those kids a little bit. I still think it's hard. By the time we get him, when he's 18, he's got a lot of habits and he's been allowed to do X, Y, Z. And mom and dad have taught him this. So I think college coaches have to be really careful, like, all things that kid. Well, will you? Does that happen once in a while? Sure, it does. But I think that's rare, and that's why it's on us to get it right. And when you see it, you'll do anything to sign that kid, because those kids who will do whatever it takes and play with some emotion make winning king. Like, is winning king, or do you have other agendas that know that it's what you want?
Well, I think we saw it on the highest level this weekend. A guy who is awesome on the floor and does this and this and this. But obviously, the Dallas Mavericks saw something that repeated itself over and over and over again, some sort of habits, some sort of behavior, some sort of combination of things that have been going on in that guy's life for the duration of his life. And you got an old school guy like a Jason Kidd who's probably tried to change those things. And he just kind of, between him and the GM and some other things and whatever's happened there. And I don't pretend like I know what I'm going, like I know what's going on, but that's that's why even guys like that get let go, or they're asked to move on. And people look at it and go, how could you do that? There's got to be a reason.
That's exactly right.
There's got to be a reason. Right. You know?
And we never know what it is, but to your point, they saw something that says, I don't think we can win at the highest level with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have 2 smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have 2 designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. 3 coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring 4 or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Coach, let's transition here. Let's talk a little John Wooden. If you're all right with that, I think most basketball coaches are right. Talk a little John Wooden. So we have our Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, a lifetime of observations here. Coach, I've got a John Wooden quote. I'll read it to you. Excuse me. And then and you can pontificate over it for a few seconds and give me your response to it. And we'll chat about it here for a couple of minutes here. So, okay. Coach Hepker, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Yes, sir.
All right. From page 134 of Wooden, a Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "A shooting drill was a conditioning drill the way I ran it. There was no standing around and just watching or resting in between. The players were always working and running and moving."
Yeah, I like it. To me, quote, that is time on fast. That's, I mean, your neck of the woods, Matt Rhule at Nebraska now, always talking about Are your players standing in practice, or are they moving? Are they getting reps? And it sounds like to me, if you go to a Nebraska football practice, you know everybody's standing. Or excuse me, everybody's moving. They're at a different station, and there's just no waste of time. And that sounds like what Coach Wooden was trying to get accomplished. The other thing that comes to mind is he was going to do his conditioning with the ball in their hands, which we are firm believers in. Mm-hmm. We are not. We just don't bury our guys on the baseline. You know, we score every drill, not every drill, but most. You know, and our punishment is a 4 and 13. So sideline and sideline, 4 touches in 13 seconds, and we are on to the next drill. But we're just not going to waste time running without a ball in our hands. So, you know, I talked about it at the clinic. You know how we play. We like to get up and down and play fast. And so that's easy for us is, once we're 2 or 3 drills of our practice, we're going to run and finish and shoot at full speed, and we're going to communicate, and we're not going to chop our feet. We're going to throw the ball hard, and after 3 weeks, we're going to be in incredible shape because we practice in the full court constantly. And I think kids appreciate that. I think most of them for coaches to coach that way, but it sounds like to me that's what Wooden was after. It's a great reminder. He was ahead of the game, wasn't he?
I think he did all right for himself, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it's very forward. That, you know, we and I'm seasoned and experienced enough to right at that transition point where coaches started thinking a little bit differently than the quote unquote Bobby Knight way of doing things. We very rarely just, okay, get on the line and run. And maybe a couple of times of the season, and that's when the players violated one of our 3 or 4 rules. You know, they didn't play hard. They weren't concentrating. They weren't being a great teammate. They weren't on time. You know, those were basically our 4 rules. So that was the only time that we ever did that type of stuff. And that was just, as one of my old assistant coaches would say, that's just a reminder of the way we, you know, we're not doing things up to the standard that we would like to do it. But otherwise, the ball was in our hand, even when we had, you know, some sort of repercussion for winning or losing. You got to dribble. We called it a 21, where you start on the baseline, dribble with your weak hand to the half court and back, and then to the baseline and back. You had to do that in 21 seconds, but the ball was in our hand and we were working on basketball stuff while we were quote unquote conditioned, but it was more skill development than it was conditioning.
Yep. Well, you probably remember from your Briarcliff days, but we get 24 weeks of contact with our guys. And so the first couple in August and September, they're on their own. And, you know, right after Labor Day, we start 2 weeks of boot camp, which for us is without a ball because then it counts as practice and we can't smoke that early. And so, you know, do we get up early in the morning and run a few days a week? We do. We've even changed, you know, based on the science and what I think is important, how we do that. We're not on the track anymore. We don't run miles. It's all in the gym. It's all basketball movements. It's sliding and jumping and backpedaling. We're not going to just run. But it's all basketball movements in the gym. And certainly that 30 to 40 minute workout before we go lift as a team helps our guys get in shape. But then in the afternoon for those 2 weeks, from 3 to 5, they're playing pickup for 2 hours on their own, player led, you know, with structure, with our open gym rule. And that's how they get in really elite shape. And not only are we running and lifting in the morning, but they're coming back for 2 hours and they're playing the game. That's how you get in shape. You get in basketball shape by playing basketball. So, you know, I think that's lost on our guys sometimes. Like, hey, coach, this is really hard. Well, it's hard because we're doing both. We're going to get a kid out in the morning, but we're also, you know, you need to play for an hour, 45 to 2 hours really hard. And if you get tired and get sloppy, then stop and quit playing. But, I think that's where the game has evolved and where coaches have got smarter. I'm a huge believer in the science and days off and rest, and we can learn from film. Even when we take a day off, it doesn't mean we have to be totally off. I think, you know, some of the other sports are ahead of us in that way, Marty, you know, it's theirs and their movements. And I think basketball has got to catch up because it is the longest season in my mind. You know, we start after Labor Day, and most years here in America, we're going to play through the middle of March. That's a long thinking season. We just You can't go for 2 hours every day from September to March. You just can't. And your number one, ability is your availability. So I'm a huge believer in that. I think obviously I've got room to grow and continue to understand things, but I think that's how our game has changed from kind of the quote unquote old school way.
Yep. Well, let's talk about that. Let's while we're talking about conditioning and I forgot to mention this. Coach and I met each other at USA Coaches Clinic down in Kansas City this past fall here, and he talked about playing with pace and getting up tempo and getting that ball moving up and down the floor. So let's jump into that while we're on the topic here. Playing with that pace and tempo. And your practice design here, Coach. I mean, how do you get it going? How do you do it in practice? How are you putting it together? Obviously, we're early February right now, so it's probably a different type of practice now on February 4th than it was, October 4th or November 4th. But what do you got going on there, Coach?
Yeah, great question and great point too. We watched film at 3:15 today on our opponent that we have tomorrow. The personnel for 15 minutes, and by the time we did our film shooting, our shot breakdown and dynamic stretch, it was probably 3:55, and we shut it down at 5. So we went live. We went hard for an hour. That's all we went today, and I think we got a lot of I think that's what a good practice design does for coaches. And for those coaches listening, Marty, I think if you have a bad practice, and hopefully you're not having very many of them, every coach is driven home thinking that was awful. The first question that should be asked was, did we plan a good practice? And I don't know how many coaches start there. I think it's like coaches, like players didn't have energy today. They want focus or this and that. Well, were you in the half court for 4 straight drills, or were you talking the whole practice, or were they getting time on task? I think it's harder at your guys' level because you just don't have the time in your day. But I think coaches have to take the time, like we do as a staff, 30 or 40 minutes to plan out a really good practice. And I'm not saying we get it right all the time, but as I reflect on practices and watch the film, and maybe it wasn't great, whatever that means, coaches love to say that. I think a lot of times it has to do with our practice design. So because of the pace we play at, we call it a Utah basket. We stole that from Rick Majerus when he coached the Utah, the youth. We want to score in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. We want to get a shot off. We want a free throw. We want to get fouled. We want a rim. Layup or dunk in on the backboard finish and paint touch three is kind of our shot selection hierarchy. And we want to do that in the first 7 seconds. Because of that, we have to practice a certain way. And for us, that means most of our drills are on the full court. So, and that also means most of our drills are our short shot clock. We very rarely use a 30-second shot clock in our practices. So, one of our drills today was a 15-second game. Where ball has to be across half by 3, and then we've got 12 more seconds to score. We've been a little impatient here offensively in our last couple of games. So, I think in Kansas City, I showed it as a 10-second game drill. Mm-hmm. You can be 10. We've done 12 this year. Today it was 15 because I wanted to get to a second or third side of the floor and turn down a good one to get a great one. But in our practices, Marty, we don't do back-to-back drills in the half court. If we do some type of half-court drill, half-court cutthroat defense or cutthroat offense or shell, that very next drill is going to be in the full court without fail. And we can't forget that's how the game is played. It's messy. It's sloppy. It's played in a full court. We play a lot. We are live a ton with constraints, always with constraints. And I talked about it, but players have more fun practice in that way. They learn better that way than a bunch of non-live, no decision-making reps, and coaches have more fun coaching that way. And so we play a ton. Trying to think about our practice today, our very first skill drill, we picked an action from our playbook and made it cutthroat. 2 teams, and it was make to take it in the half court for 8 minutes. And so we're making a bunch of decisions and an action that we just put in a couple of weeks ago. I don't think we did a non-live drill today in the 65 minutes that we went, Marty. So, that's our personal preference. That's how we attack it. As I mentioned, there's a lot of ways to win and there's a lot of ways to practice. I think our practices are up tempo. I think there's great energy, and I think for the most part, our guys had a lot of fun, which is okay. It's okay to have fun, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for 16 or 20 minutes, we've got the speaker on, and we're shooting and we're stretching, and then we get it off, and we get to work, and we compete, and there's winners and there's losers, and then we go watch the film, and we go home, and we rest and repeat. So that's kind of how we attack things, and we've had a lot of success doing it that way.
It's better, in my opinion, and I think we're of the same ilk, Adam. I would rather just come in, bust your butts for 75 minutes and get the heck out of here, then putz around, do this and that, and have it take an hour 30, hour 40. Let's get in, let's get our work done, and let's roll. I think that's the attitude that you need to bring. And a lot of that starts with the head coach. Starts with the head coach, because you've got to bring that energy, and you've got to be ready to bring that energy from the get-go.
That's right. That's right. And you can't let up for those 60 to 90 minutes. You know, the longest we'll go is an hour and 45. We don't ever do two-hour practices. We're going to practice 100 times this year. So, listen, if I can't get taught in 100 practices what we're trying to accomplish, then I'm not very good at my job. You know what I mean? I'm just not going to keep you around for 2-3 hours and bury you to death. But my terminology is no fluff. You know, when we meet in the center circle before practice and, you know, we talk about what we're trying to get accomplished, you know, I will often say, fellas, there is zero fluff on this practice plan. It is intentional. It might be opponent specific. It might be Mid-America specific. But everything is well thought out and things we need to get better at. And I think guys appreciate that. I think kids want consistency these days. You mentioned it with the energy. They know what they're going to get from me every single day. My voice probably sounds like it. What I'm not going to do is come in super reactionary after a loss. I think that's what most coaches do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the same. I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to show you what you did well, and I'm going to show you what we did poorly, and then we're going to go fix it. But for me, he's not going to change in my approach most days. And I think there's a life lesson in that. I think your kids can learn from that and take that into the real world. But I think they appreciate that because they're not walking on eggshells. They know what Coach Hep's demeanor is going to be like every single day. And it gives them a freedom and a relaxedness to them to go out and be the best version of themselves, because they're not wondering what kind of mood their head coach is going to be in. And I think a lot of coaches can learn.
Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America, Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through, COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court. Coach, let's talk about putting together a great camp. Another thing, as I scrolled through your stuff, it didn't take me long to figure out is you love putting together camps, working with young people, you know, right smack dab in the middle of the season, which I'm going to be honest with you, I thought was crazy. You did a shooting camp or something along those lines? I mean, hats off to you. I think I'm a little nuts sometimes, but I was like, holy crap. You love putting that together. What's it take to put together a great camp? You know, we're still in season mode, but yep. In about 6 weeks, everybody's going to be start turning the page towards putting together their summer camps and different things like that, whether it's high school level, college level, whatever it may be. What makes a great camp? How do you put together a great camp?
Yeah. Well, I think it starts with the coaches, the perspective on camps. So what I hear from a lot of coaches is, I've got to do a youth camp next week, or we've got to do two this summer. And it's almost a burden. And I just don't understand that, Marty. You know, So here's the story behind our camp. We inherited a really good thing there from Coach Lamar, who did summer camps for years. And when I was a player here from 04 to 08, we did 6 weeks of summer camp for little kids, Marty, in June, July, 6 weeks. Wow. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. You know, and you talk about energy and effort. I mean, Coach Lamar was gassed after those weeks. And now I can relate to that. You know, we do 3 of them, Marty, in the summer. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., all day camp. Not a lot of people offer those anymore, but the parents, at least here in the Kansas City area, they love them. You know, you referenced the winter break camp that we did December 30th or 31st now, which we've done for 2 or 3 years. Had over 100 kids. We kept them from 1 to 4 that day. I had parents looking at me like, you're only going to keep them for 3 hours? Like, can I leave them with you till 9 o'clock tonight? And so what we do, Marty, it's our secret sauce. I can't believe I'm sharing this. But at the small college level and the high level, nobody keeps their players around in the summer. Very few coaches keep them around.
It's hard to.
Hard to do because they don't have a job. There's nowhere for them to live. And there's a lot to figure out. I get it. Well, we figure it out. And we host our 3 camps. We do a giant high school team camp in June. And 36 to 40 teams right off the bat in June. And so we convince our players to be around for about 4 weeks in June or July around those 4 camps. And they are our coaches for camp, and we pay them.
Mm-hmm.
We pay them to work camp. And I know a lot of coaches don't do that as well. They just see it as something their players should do, but we pay them. And, oh, by the way, while you guys are here, fellas, we're going to lift 3 after camp, and then we're going to practice, and then you're going to come back at 8 tonight, and we're going to play against the best kids in Kansas City from 8 to 10 as a group. And, you know, Marty, we've gotten something accomplished this summer. While every other small college is sending their guys home with a workout that they're not doing, we are together learning our terminology, learning each other, and just playing, quite honestly, letting them come up with their own solutions. I am not going to overcoach these guys in the summer. I'm just not, mostly because I just had to teach camp from 9 to 3 that day. I don't have the energy to.
Mm-hmm.
But I like my guys to come up with their own solutions, and that's how we keep our guys around in the summer. Do we have to find them housing? Yes. Does my wife host our guys in our basement, 3 or 4 of them every summer, and feed them? Yes, she's a saint. Our local guys house our guys here, you know, our local high school guys.
Yep.
We put the time and effort in to find them housing. We feed them meals so it doesn't cost them anything, and we pay them a little bit of money to work camp. And the beauty of it, Marty, is that every single home game we've had this year, those campers, if they'd like, they can email our assistants, and they can come in for our free game before the game with their camp shirt on, get a free ticket, and they get to break us out and hear a little bit about our core values, the behind-the-scenes look. So those same kids who see my guys as celebrities and say, oh, there's Marty. He was my coach this summer, and get to give him a high five, are coming to our games in the wintertime, and just as much as it makes their day, it makes our day as well to see him again. So, on top of that, Marty, it's a fundraiser for our program. It's a fundraiser for the Epcor family. There's a lot of good things if you're willing to put in the time and effort to a great camp.
Awesome. That 3 minutes right there is just gold. You know, you're talking about building that camp, building those relationships, and you're right. And I know that guilty as charged, where now once you get into the camp, you kind of find some mojo and you get yourself going here and the kids give you energy and that type of thing. But you got to steer that mindset around that. It's, you know, we don't have to do a camp. We get to do a camp. I mean, we could be really, you know, doing something like a real job, and that's not what we're here to do. We get to do this, and I think that as coaches, as you start lining up your stuff for this summer, bring that positive energy. Don't look at it as a we have to do it, that type of deal. This is a great opportunity for you to sell your program and to get people excited about it. And I love the attitude of the way that you're treating your players, and you know, this is a great way to get extra work in during the summertime and build the program in that manner.
Yeah. Oh, wait, listen. We've always had good players. We're going to recruit players to Mid-America. But for years, Coach Lamar, and now we've continued it, has found ways to keep his guys around in the summer. By the way, that's exactly what Division I schools now do with their 8 weeks where their guys are taking classes and they're practicing. But we've done that for years. And imagine how far ahead we are of most programs, Marty, when we start in September than the average NAI or D2. You know, like they can't do anything with their guys because of what we got accomplished in the summer. So it's an absolute separator for us. Is a lot of work. Am I gassed, you know, after camp? Yes. But man, the dividends are there. Mm-hmm. The relationships and all the things you just mentioned, it's absolutely worth it. So, you know, I think you gotta put a lot of playing into it and not just roll the ball out like a lot of these camps. We do, we still do an hour of fundamentals that I lead, you know, from 9 to 10 to start camp. We do John Wooden hurry, hurry stations from 10 to 11. And then, of course, in the afternoon, we play some games. We have a film room session. We give a devotional, things like that. And the kids eat lunch. And here comes mom to pick them up at 3. And the kids got a heck of a day. So it's a little bit of a classic old school camp that in today's market, at least in here in the Kansas City area, is a really good thing.
Let's wrap up on this, Coach. Let's talk about a little bit of player development, especially when you're talking about guards and playmakers. And at every level, guards are so extremely important, but especially at the NAI level, there's a lot of guards. You've got to really, really develop those perimeter players to be your difference makers, because if you had a 6'8 to 6'10 difference maker, guess what? He's not going to be at Mid-American Nazarene or Briar Cliff. He's going to be
solely for a year.
Yes, exactly. Excuse me. So, you know, what are you doing to develop those kids? You talked about the summer session, different things like that. What are you emphasizing? You know, what's the secret to the sauce there?
Yeah, you know, for us, that's the point guard position. You know, me being a former point guard, that position in our program gets coached unlike any other position, and there's probably a higher standard than any other position in our program, and I make sure the point guards we recruit recognize that, because that is the position I played, and I think see, you know, maybe at a different level than most coaches. And the way we play, Marty, requires our point guards to play differently than what they are used to, because we want to fly the ball down the floor and most first and foremost advance that thing instead of dribbling, and then. That is phase one of our break, you know, right. And now we're getting into our secondaries and things like that. So it starts with a conversation in the recruiting process that they are aware of what they are getting themselves into. It's decently enticing because of how we play. And hey, the ball's going to be in your hands and you're going to get to make a lot of decisions. But I want kids to know what they're getting themselves into. And it is a lot of one-on-one time with those guards and those playmakers, and it's film, it's talking through things, it's asking the question, what did you see here? You know, we had a pretty truthful film session yesterday. We won on Saturday against, you know, one of the bottom teams in our league, and I didn't think we played well, and the ball didn't move, and we made some really questionable decisions offensively. But the title of our clips, for a lot of these clips in our film session, Marty, were questions. And what I don't want in our film sessions is me to stand up there and just yak at our guys for 30 minutes. I want them talking. I want our film sessions are interactive, and I want them answering questions. And that's what it was. And with our point guards and our playmakers, that's what it usually is for me, is starting with, Marty, what do you see on this play, on this possession, and allowing them to talk. And I'm quite honestly, that breaks the ice for a 18, 19, 20-year-old kid who's intimidated by sitting in the head coach's office. You know what I mean? It breaks the ice for them a little bit, mm-hmm. Lets their guard down. And then it gets the conversation going, and you really see, like, okay, this kid has no clue what his pick and roll reads are against a hard head.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about it. We showed it to him, but he still doesn't understand it. So I got to do my job better. Like, we can blame the kid, or we can say, I got to teach this better. And so it's a lot of film. It's a lot of If you're a point guard, you're coming by the office weekly. You're sitting down. I don't make any other position doing that, but you just are. Inevitably, that conversation flows from basketball to life and how are you doing academically and how are you doing spiritually, which is a great time to connect with that quarterback on the floor. And then I think that the final piece of it, Marty, for us is if we really got into in all of the decision making, that is guard play. That's what it is. It's progressions. It's trying to really simplify and boil it down to if this, then that. For example, if it's a soft ball screen coverage, it's a low show, they're at the level, the play is behind us. It's what we call the fill behind, the shake guy, the lift guy, whatever coaches want to call it. If it's aggressive, if it's hedge, if it's blitz, it's the see pass. It's the pass you can see ahead of you. We advance it. We get it out of our hands. We engage you, and we move it. You know, I think that's the fastest way you can develop your guards and your playmakers is show them the if this, then that scenarios and let them rep it. And, and I talked about how we rep it is through live play in our practices and then making your scout team be in a certain pick and roll coverage or dribble handoff coverage or whatever it is so that your guards get to get a bunch of reps in those scenarios and then see like, okay, that worked, but that didn't, and learn from it. Early in the year, you know, I referenced it a little bit earlier. I'm a huge let them figure it out, Coach Marty. I am not going to give you all the answers to the test on October 13th. I'm just not. I want my players come up with some of their own solutions on their own. And when they do, man, I'm going to stick with them rather than me forcing it down their throat. You know what I mean? So, but I think just coaches, back to my point, if we can really boil it down to what's your read, what are your progressions, just like a quarterback, it can simplify the game. Here's two or three reads you're looking for. And then if it's not there, let's move the ball. Let's get on to the next action, you know, and then just not asking them to dribble it 15 or 16 times. Let's move it. And the next time that pick and roll comes, let's be ready to punish it. So I think that's where I've gotten better as a coach is let's have solutions for switching, for hedging, for ice, for under. Let's arm our players with that and then watch them take the reins and run.
Perfect. Great way to end it tonight. Adam Hepker, head men's basketball coach, Mid-American Nazarene. Coach, if folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how do they find out about it?
Yeah, certainly our website, MNUsports.com. You know, if coaches are ever in the area, we love having coaches at our practices. As I said before, we're whatever you want, whatever you need. You know, notes from my clinics, clips from our practices. I'm on social media, A. Hepker, my last name, Hepker, HEPKER14 on Twitter. And I also just look up my email and don't hesitate to reach out. I got a lot of, I spoke in Kansas City and then I spoke up at the Iowa High School Basketball Coaches Association. And it felt like all fall I was emailing with high school coaches, which I really enjoy, and jumping on Zooms and phone calls like this. So please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm an open book and like you, Marty, love to share the game and grow the game. So I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome stuff, man. I appreciate it. Adam Hepker, head men's basketball coach, Mid-American Nazarene. Coach, I hope you enjoyed your time on A Pen and a Napkin.
I did, Marty. Thanks again.
Yeah, appreciate it. If you could hold the line here just a second, we got to just wrap up here. Again, we want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. We got so many good things coming up. We got the Coaches Clinic in April. We got Varsity Prep Academy Camp in May. We got more stuff coming in June, but I can't tell you about that yet. It's still kind of in the works, but it's going to be there. So just a lot of really, really great things. Really, really excited for the stuff that's coming up. So get signed up for the Coaches Clinic. Get your players signed up for the Varsity Prep Academy and just be ready for something coming out here in June. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.